Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a Vinnie Eastwood Show special. It's the Dark Occulted Mysticism Show. And today, we have our Dark Occulted Mystic panel of Freighter X, a member of, like, nine secret societies and rover of musty tomes that haven't been looked on by a motherfracker for, like, 200 years. And we have James Wright, former potential concubine to the 33rd degree of Freemasonry and knows all of the filthy rituals. I say potential concubine because there was no concubinary. And... and then on the other thing, speaking of the light, we have Mater X,
who's the co-host with Freighter X on the
yes, the
Middle Chamber on Saturday nights on SyncBook Radio Network.
Now,
not quite a concubine.
No. But she's cute.
Better.
She's cute nonetheless.
Real deal, man.
Yeah.
Real deal.
Yeah.
I gave him plenty of sons, so I qualify for full-fledged status there.
Yeah. Just make sure the wax on his wings don't melt when he flies too close to his sons. There is a disinformation panelist in Freemasonry. And by panelist, I mean the royal panelist, as in there's a huge disinformation campaign going on about how to make it not look all that bad and how to maintain reputation. And one of the points I'd like to raise is that, is Freemasonry damned if it does and damned if it doesn't come clean about any form of scumbaggery that has infiltrated its organization?
Not at all. They could set an example. I mean, after all, what happened to me and to countless others, if the correct perpetrators would have been disciplined in the correct Masonic ways, then they would have set an example from the leadership, I mean, and the remainder of the curmudgeons in the order would have looked at that and gone, I guess I better not be a douche lord today. So I think it would have had a very positive outcome, actually.
Do you agree, Freighter? Because there's the other element where maybe they're afraid of a reliving of the dark old days where there was a persecution of Freemasonry because of a few bad apples.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, here's the thing. There already is a certain amount of bias and prejudice out there. I mean, you and I, Jay, both have experienced it as Freemasons coming forward and just talking openly about being Freemasons in and of itself is a judgment from others. But I went down the track of, in the beginning, I think, more than lately of really trying to extol the virtues of the order and the system and all that. But, you know, I've gotten to the point in my experience with it that I really have lost a lot of hope in the system for a multitude of reasons, which we've already discussed, chief among them being the inequality of the sexes within, you know, I mean, the fact that they don't recognize women, the fact that there are still Grand Lodges out there that don't recognize black, you know, Prince Hall Masons and, you know, other nationalities, across the seas. I mean, there's so much closed-mindedness and rigid control still in place within the system of Freemasonry, not to mention the nepotism, corruption, and, you know, just general scumbaggery, as you call it, Vinny, that is going on the local level and on the nationwide level and on the global level. So there's too much of that to ignore anymore. You know, there's too much we're in the time now where the doors should be thrown open and the information should be made available to those who choose to know, and especially with regards to government policies and these leaders who are involved with these secret orders and use it as a backdrop for keeping the public uninformed.
Well, what is it that they fear? What is it that they're keeping secret? And if you're talking about running open the doors, I mean, what would happen if there was a full-scale investigation or something of that nature?
Well, that would have to involve a lot of law enforcement personnel who are Masons. So it's going to all come down to where do their loyalties lie. And as I've publicized and harped on many times, the oath of the 32nd degree is starkly different than the oath of the Master Mason's degree, where you're no longer swearing allegiance to your government or whatever, you're swearing allegiance to the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite and what they call its form of government and nothing else. So if the Scottish Rite was under fire and any lawyer or judge or anybody involved in the prosecution thereof, then they're going to be told, don't you dare. And out of pure fear, they won't.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to get more specific about what you're saying for anybody who's listening. The fact of the matter is that what Jay's talking about is when you are initiated and join the Blue Lodge system, you take oaths and swear allegiance and obligations with the disclaimer is always clearly there that you'd never be asked to do anything that would go against your country or your family obligations or your own honor and dignity. I mean, and yet, you know, but you do take an oath to keep the secrets of Masons and Masonry, murder and treason notwithstanding. This is part of the oath and obligation. When you join the Scottish Rite, on the other hand, and as a matter of fact, when you receive an invitation to join the Scottish Rite as just a general Blue Lodge Mason in the mail, you're already being asked to swear an oath of fealty to the Supreme Council in the application form. And there is no qualification of murder and treason withstanding. There is no qualification of you won't be asked to do anything against your country or your family or anything like that. As a matter of fact, I've got it on eyewitness testimony from high-ranking Freemasons that when they joined the red cap, the middle level between the black capped 32nd degree, there's the red cap, what is it called, Jay, the Knight Court of Honor?
Knight Commander Court of Honor, yeah.
Yeah, the Knight Commander Court of Honor, where you get a red cap before you get a white cap. There's a little in-between kind of little club there. And I've had...
And if you backstab them, you get capped.
You get capped, yeah, right. But no, I have on eyewitness testimony, they were told in no uncertain terms when they were initiated into the order that if they didn't, you know, they were to do what they were told, and if they didn't like it, they could just get out right now. You know, I mean, it's all about totalitarian hierarchical control, very, very rigid, almost Vatican papal like structure within the Scottish Rite, for example. But now here's the thing, though. We can't keep it completely isolated on Freemasonry because we're dealing with global power elite here. We're dealing with dark cult of mystics across the board. It's not just Freemasons. It's these guys that belong to all these orders and then some that are the ones that will never see a courtroom. They'll never see the inside of a courtroom. They'll never hear charges read against them. They'll never even acknowledge a culpability deniability in anything, plausible deniability across the board for these guys, because they're part of the elite that never get touched. They've always been, you know, Teflon coated, nothing sticks to them. And that's just the way it is. And that's the structure in America. You just look through the newspaper ads or newspaper headlines and a lot of the back pages, and Mater X chime in, if you will, of all the cases of the wealthy and the powerful. And Jay, you brought it up yourself several times on your show, Dial M for Mason, that these guys, they get away with worse than murder and get slapped on the wrist and get, you know, nothing happens to them because of their connections between their families and these, you know, different levels of cabals and inner, you know, concentric circles of memberships that go across generations and across, they cross all borders and nationalities. This is a special little club. I mean, right or wrong, guys.
Oh, right.
Oh, totally. Sure. And that's why the guys at the top, I mean, how do you prosecute them? It's you know, you'd have to have a complete breakdown of the political structure of that region. I mean, if they would have disciplined the guys that did what they did to me in Texas, then the entire Texas state legislature would crumble in Austin, because those are the type of people who are involved.
And the guy that all of us have talked to now, Dr. Colin Ross, I mean, he, you know, here's a doctor who reviewed 15,000 declassified CIA MK Ultra documents depicting one gruesome, torturous case of mind control and testing on individuals after another. I mean, it nonchalantly describing feeding uranium to kids and putting electrode implants in people. And yet, you know, I mean, you caught the show, Jay. What about that part? He was talking about how they tried to cure the gay man by giving him, putting electrodes in him and doing psychic driving and you know, all that. Was that crazy or what?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they fund all kinds of ridiculous stuff. The most crazy would, of course, be the MK Ultra mind control stuff that's come out.
Well, yeah, and that's this is the real shocker, guys, is that this stuff isn't new. It's been on the books and declassified since the 70s. That's the one thing he told me. I don't know if you guys caught that in your talk with him, that these documents are not new. They're just declassified, made readily available now, per se, but they've been on out there since the 70s, since the Church Committee, since the original intelligence exposure committees that started after, like, the Pentagon Papers and the Watergate scandal and all the things in America that led to them having to come clean at least a little bit. But, you know, it's always really, to me, left me kind of bothered. Like, I've always felt like, you know, for example, Bush Sr. was the director of the CIA during those committee hearings. You know, and a lot of the paperwork and stuff supposedly that was destroyed or, you know, turned over. And there's a lot of sketchy stuff. You know, in the end, the final analysis was, well, yeah, we did a lot of bad things back in the 50s and 60s, but we're all better now. We're not doing it anymore. You know, we're not going to, you know, no more MK Ultra programs for us. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all over words. With, you know, oh, that's in the past, man. It's in the past.
Yeah, I got two words for you, Naked Survivor or Miley Cyrus. You know what I mean? Like, either way, it's the mind control programs are on full effect, and it's all designed to blow our minds. That's
what's Naked Survivor? Is that when they put a whole bunch of hot girls on an island with a bunch of sexual predators and see who survives the longest?
That would probably sell, Vinny. That's
otherwise known
right
as otherwise known as Jekyll Island.
Yeah, that's a seller right there, Vinny. No, Naked Survivor was something that Joe Atwell was talking about with Henrik Palmgren on Red Ice last couple weeks ago. It's one of the new generation of Survivor offshoots where they're like, they're given nothing. You know, they have, like, you know, they're wearing just thongs or whatever, and they have nothing on these islands. They have to eat raw food and bugs and Naked Survivor. You know what I mean? It's full on. I mean, it's just full on debauched, full on decadence, full on mind-melting, sugar-coated mind-melting garbage that is designed to do exactly what it does and bring us all down to a nice, healthy, low vibration and narrow bandwidth of probability and possibilities.
Of sex, deceit, and scumbaggery, and selfishness, more or less.
Well, yeah, you know, the whole point of the shows and is the fact that you're got people preying upon each other, betraying, you know, forming alliances and then betraying each other. And it's all about the final winner, you know, winner at all costs, right? Just fully, you know, that's the exact opposite to me of what the spirit of what we all should be embracing in our world right now is the exact opposite, which, you know, they if you look at one competitive reality show after another on TV, it's a series of depictions of people preying upon each other and betraying each other's confidence and trust. And it's just, I think, designed to
it's an example propose. I mean, it's kind of like the Simpsons, Family Guy, and all of these other things. How many families that appear on television currently are not dysfunctional or having to deal with some kind of a zombie apocalypse or something absolutely extraordinary? Normal families who are actually really, really happy and setting a good example for the rest of the people.
The zombie apocalypse, she said she couldn't think of one. The zombie apocalypse meme is the other one, because that's the same thing. Now we're taking the preying upon each other to a new level. We're literally consuming each other now, you know, and or having to kill and maim and destroy, you know, by cutting the heads open of the ones who are going to feed on the others. You know, it's just it's that full on kill or be killed, you know, survival of the fittest to the fullest. And that's, you know, it's so transparent. If we're considering another view, if we're looking at reality and looking at humanity from the perspective of like what Freeman calls the friendship agenda, which, you know, may sound corny to some, but the whole idea of the friendship agenda or anything like that is the idea that we launch from a new belief that humanity is inherently good, that people are inherently good, that they are inherently good natured, and they really inherently, for the most part, most people I've come into contact with, they don't want to hurt other people. They're not trying to take advantage. They're just trying to survive and trying to make it through this world. And nowadays, boy, the hard times across the board, I'll tell you, my heart goes out to all the listeners and all the supporters and all the truthers out there who I have had contact with in these past few months. It is one sad story after another across America. It is unbelievable to me the amount of hardship that I have witnessed and heard reports from with regards to people in our world today. And I'll tell you, Vinny, America is fast heading to a third world status, because it is, I'll tell you, the picture of the poverty in America is a stark and grim reality that is touching everybody's lives.
Have you seen the education statistics? Americans on average are much dumber than people in the third world. The people in the third world know how to tie their shoelaces and stuff, man. They know how to find their country on a map.
You're merely exposing my ignorance, buddy, because, I mean, I believe you. I wouldn't even know. I've never been outside of America. I feel sheltered, and I feel like we've been duped right from the get-go. That's why I was mentioning
it. It was something like 70% of Americans don't even have a freaking passport, so they can't even travel out of the country even if they wanted to.
I don't have a passport.
Yeah, I've risked my case.
It's like $150 to get a passport, Vinny. You got to go down to the post office with $150 to fill out the application.
In New Zealand, it's $500.
Yeah, I don't have an extra $150.
And we've got like 4 million people that live in this country and 1 million New Zealanders abroad. Like, we're one of the most well-traveled people in the world. I mean, could you imagine if 20% of Americans were globally roaming around and whatnot? Maybe they are. There's probably heaps of Americans out there. I see plenty traveling. And I don't know what it is, but I don't know. I'm not even going anywhere with this. I've just got some kind of wanderlust.
Oh, but you make great points as far as how we perceive the outside world, how we perceive what, you know, when I say that America's fast, you know, becoming a third world nation, and you point out America's surpassed third world nation status in many ways culturally. It's just a matter of perspective.
It's got like a 50 times higher birth mortality rate than the third world.
Exactly. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. That's the kind of point I mean. And this is, we are so sheltered, and our perception is so sculpted by the media that we are looking at the world through fishbowl. You know, we're looking at the world through a lens that's been magnified and narrowed down, you know, and we are not to perceive it. There is no greater firewalled reality than American perception, as far as I'm concerned. And I see it over and over again when you just talk to anybody walking down the street. It is the mind control program is in so full effect in the average populace of America. Each person is doing their part to reinforce the system of control within their own mind.
It's problematic, isn't it? And in so doing, they don't care about anything that's actually real. And as a result, everything of substance eventually erodes away over time and allows itself to be replaced by something else.
All that people are interested in are pop culture references like entertainment, movies, TV, and sports. That's it. I've been working on the line, working in an Italian restaurant these past couple months. You know, just as I'm finishing up the book, we're like, in order for me to finish the book, I had to take time and not work, and that is just impossible with our situation. So we've been struggling. I've had to get back to work a couple months ago just to make ends meet while I'm finishing up this book. And I'll tell you, I've taken tolls. I've polled people at work and asked them, "Do you know who Edward Snowden is? You know, do you know who Bradley Manning is? Do you know who blah, blah, blah is? Fill in the blank. I don't care who it is across the board. Any current event, anything going on?" Not one. Nobody knows anything. Nothing. It is shocking. These are kids that are in college. They're in college currently pursuing degrees and PhDs and postgraduate studies. Completely narrowed, specialized focus with absolutely no clue as to what's going on and who's out there except for pop culture, except for movie stars, TV stars, you know, musicians and sports athletes, sports stars. That's it.
I recall when I was in film and media studies in university in the second year, the incidentally American lecturer said that the reason why TV was so good is because it gave us all things in common. And my argument was that the things that we have in common because of TV aren't real, don't matter, and in so doing, our relationships become less, and so does the understanding of the world around us, because nothing we care about and nothing we see has any real value. Only the things that we believe are fantasy, only the things that are fantasy appear real to us. And I got a D for that essay, unfortunately, so I quit university and said, "This is bullshit."
I hear you, man. I hear you. You know, I've had similar experiences on my own with different professors, and it was the same then as it is now. I mean, it's grown more, the gulf of the gap and the gulf of ignorance, I would say, the collective duh, the confederacy of dunces, the just the general feeling of malaise, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
See, these people don't even know what the word malaise is. They think it's a kind of mayonnaise from Malaysia.
Or a fruit spread, you know, marmalade, right?
Yeah, pass the marmalades.
But
you just muted yourself out there, Fredo.
Oh, sorry. Nice. Seriously, one, it is seriously, you know, apparent though when you can just turn to
yeah. And Freda knows what he's talking. Freda knows what he's talking about, ladies and gentlemen, because he's got five kids. He would know what's apparent.
Four kids at home and one grown up and on his own, you know. But it is, in fact, it is. We do know what it's like to be and what is apparent. And it is a tragedy at many times being a parent to see the world that your children are inheriting, that a world filled with electronic gadgetry and distraction, which is so working to keep everyone distracted and really just not caring at all about what's going on and what direction we're being led.
See, I thought about a script, and you guys have seen V for Vendetta, right? And he walks into the BTN, you know, British Television Network, and he's got a bomb strapped to his chest, and he dresses everybody up in the same costume that he's got, and he basically just plays a pre-recorded thing onto live air and hijacks all the mainstream media just for a minute to sit down and have a little chat and tell everybody that there's something very terribly wrong with this country, isn't there? and actually foments a revolution based upon a singular hijacking, which he never got caught in and nobody died in. Oh, well, actually, he did kill a whole bunch of people, didn't he? Little police officers and stuff and thugs. But the point still remains is there's something in that, not in the terms of, oh, let's violently take over broadcasters. No. I'm talking about competing broadcasting. There must be a way to amplify the voice of truth to overpower the current mainstream media paradigm. And people have been trying. We've been trying in all manner of different ways. And I wonder whether or not it will be enough and be enough in time at all. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, the Dark Occulted Mysticism Special. Check out the sponsors on the homepage, the old blue shield, if you want to protect yourself from all these radiation, and at least some of the side effects of all this gadgetry. You know, click on the blue shield banner on the homepage there, plus the old gourmet soap kitchen and Wagga Wagga, the high tea cafe. There's a couple of books up there as well, like The Crowdfunding Revolution. So, also, remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast, does not exist without your funding, ladies and gentlemen, and believe me, times have been really, really hard. Okay, me and my wife have to buy, like, our meals one at a time. You know, that's how bad it is. We can't even do a week shopping. It's really, it kind of fills your life with anxiety, just not having enough of that kind of jazz. We're surviving, and so I haven't been complaining about it up until now. And I realized everybody's in a lot of hard places. Freight is in a hard place. James is in a hard place. I'm in a hard place. I'm sure a lot of you listeners are too. And if you wanted to donate and support any of us, we've all got websites and we'd very much appreciate your donation right away. And we'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the Dark Occulted Mysticism Special, and we have Freighter X, Mater X, and James Wright, and we're talking about, well, Dark Occulted Mysticism, obviously. Now, what I was talking about afterwards was how exactly are we going to be able to garner the right ability, or rather the right capacity of influence, to actually make a real visible change in the future for, well, basically the next generation.
Well, there's only one real answer, man, and that is to sow the seeds of psycho-spiritual anarchy. That's what I think. That's it, man. That's the only answer.
That and know thy enemy. If you will indulge me for just a moment, I have a little thing in my hands at the moment. It's a book. Not a book, but it's a three-ring binder with a manual in it that was privately done, and it's called Promoting the Masonic Message, and it's something that only I had my privileged hands on as a Supreme Council employee, because it was my job to read it and understand it for the PR of the place. And so I've been flipping through while we've been talking, looking at some things of interest, and it's not too long, so I'll make this short. But like here on one page, page 4, it says, "It is generally agreed that if we are to survive into the 21st century in our current form, we must accomplish the following in the general public. 1. Explain Freemasonry and promote a positive image of our fraternity. 2. Inform people of our humanitarian efforts and programs. 3. Publicize that we are a positive community force to be reckoned with. What can your lodge do to help itself and the fraternity? Appoint a community or public relations chairman to handle all lodge publicity and community relations matters, and to work with the district Masonic relations officer. Publicize your programs, and don't forget to inform your members on what is going on and why. Solicit their support. Don't just pay lip service to community relations. Do something. Tell your friends, neighbors, business associates how your lodge is promoting the interest of the community. Most important of all, persuade your members that their interest, concern, enthusiasm, and action is not only important, but vital." Then it goes on to say on page 7, "In every lodge, there are at least several men with knowledge and experience that will be of help. They include newspaper reporters, advertising and public relations specialists, and radio and TV advertising salespeople. Your secretary should compile a list of men with knowledge and experience in public relations and communications. Some names on the list may be members who are not active in the lodge. You will have to seek them out and impress upon them the importance of the job that needs to be done by the committee. After reviewing the list of names, the Worshipful Master can appoint a chairman. It would then be the chairman's responsibility to organize the committee, keep the members motivated, make assignments, and monitor results. Anything your lodge does to communicate with its members and the public should come under the direction of your public relations committee. This includes your lodge newsletter, publicity releases, participation at public events, and especially any dealings with news reporters and other media representatives." Now, later on, several chapters later, page 44, it gives an example of a typical Masonic radio advertisement, which just about sums up every one that there's ever been ever on TV, radio, print, you name it. So, this is supposed to be 15 seconds or 60, depending on how much you add or detract from it, and it goes, "What's happened to America? If you watch the nightly news, you may be led to believe that this country isn't what it used to be, that we're no longer competitive, that America is in decline. We think not. We're the Masons. We're members of the world's oldest and largest fraternity, more than 2.5 million men who are proud to be proud of our country, men who believe in the values that helped to build this nation, men willing to devote themselves to maintaining America as the world's greatest nation, the Masons, men who make America work. This message brought to you by the local Masons in your community, good men working together to accomplish great things." So there you have it.
it's just like a political ram. You know how the Republicans and the Democrats, they sort of work together to accomplish the same goals, no matter which one of them wins.
Right.
And they both have remarkable spin doctors. So regardless of which direction the country wants to go, they go in the same direction they want to go.
And much like the parties of the Democrats and the Republicans, much like that, the Scottish Rite too is a pilot fish that latches itself on to the carcass of the greater fish, you know, the whale that is ancient craft masonry in America going back till the 18th century. You know, Scottish Rite is one of these side orders that latches on and then tries to claim authority and tries to speak with the authority of masonry. That's what you're hearing in that little passage that Jay wrote or read. That comes from a Scottish Rite handbook, correct?
Yeah, Supreme Council, yeah. Like Supreme here, Council. Under advertising. Advertising yeah. Masonry may seem inappropriate. Remember, however, advertising is more than trying to sell. Advertising can be used to rebuild our image, and that is what we are trying to do through advertising. Masons are misunderstood because of the lack of communication in promoting the Masonic message. Advertising allows us to tell our story how and where we want it told. Masonic ads should be accurate and informative. By presenting the proper information, we may get an individual to really think about the value of Masonry, perhaps for the first time. A fringe benefit of Masonic advertising is the pride it instills in its members. It's a rare individual who isn't proud and excited to hear his lodge's name on the radio or see a commercial about his beloved fraternity. So, I mean, just more...
It's cognitive dissonance because it's implied that they're speaking for Masonry. There's no distinction being made between the Scottish Rite and Freemasonry proper, even though there is one still to this day.
My favorite is with the sentence, advertising allows us to tell our story how and where we want it told. How and where are in boldface.
And just to follow suit on this, just to be consistent and match Jay in reading excerpts, I'll read you. This is from the manuscript, page 162 of the soon to be published Secret War Inside Freemasonry that I'm working on, chapter 10, conclusions. I wanted to read this little excerpt about the same leadership that produced. This is an early embryonic form of that leadership that produced that material that Jay read to us just a moment ago. Now, this goes like this. There are several rare and obscure tomes which can often be found collecting dust on the shelves of what passes for libraries in most subordinate lodges in America, which offer very interesting insights into the global view of the early leadership of the Scottish Rite. The books are a curious group of privately issued volumes under the headings of Legenda and readings 1 through 33. These are the volumes, the number of volumes. On the surface, these little handbooks seem to be nothing more than supplemental commentaries to the massive compilation Morals and Dogma by Pike. And though the works are unsigned, they were clearly written by a disciple of, if not the man himself, in the latter half of the 19th century. Now, I've reviewed all these volumes, and I possess a few copies myself, especially the 32nd and 33rd of both sets. Page 33 of Legenda 32 states clearly that the doctrine of Masonry will ultimately rule the intellectual world is certain, though that day is far distant in the future. And Masonry must in the end conquer because its only weapon are truth, charity, and persuasion, and that logic of reason of which the sword of a knight is the symbol. And then on Legenda 19 through 32, which is in one volume, delivers the consistent vision of the Scottish Rite as the great bringer of equilibrium to the masses. On page 101, it calls for the realization of, quote, a new world order out of chaos. And this is written in like 1865, guys, right around the time of the Civil War. And the essential doctrine of the Scottish Rite is laid out on page 100 through 101, that the intellectual and social chaos in the midst of which we perish has for its cause the neglect of initiation of its test and its mysteries. So the author continues to cite the ills of the uninitiated masses, which lacks the essential law of nature, that of initiation by labors and of dangerous, toilsome, and voluntary progress, has been fatally disowned. So to rebuild society shattered and decayed, we must reestablish hierarchy and initiation. And this is the great purpose of the Scottish Rite. The reign of superstition has begun and must endure until the time when the true religion shall be established on the eternal basis of the hierarchy in 3 degrees and of the triple power which the ternary exercises fatally and providentially in the three worlds. Now, I want to point out, I'm going to end the quote there. I want to point out that it's remarkable that he just mentions the hierarchy in 3 degrees, which is the Blue Lodge. It's ancient craft masonry. It has nothing to do with the Scottish Rite. And yes, that's where they're focusing the authority of initiation. But isn't that remarkable, guys?
Oh, yeah. They actually define it here. They're talking about the writing of a Masonic press release, and it says, "This writing technique is called the inverted pyramid. It permits the editor to pick up the important facts of the story in the first few lines. Then, if he does not have space or time to use the whole release, he can cut it from the bottom, where least important details are given. This is true of both print and broadcast media." And then here's another story, the answer to give whenever somebody asks about the secrets in Freemasonry. You are to say, "There's nothing secret about Freemasonry. To 3.5 million Masons around the nation and in this community, there's nothing secret about Freemasonry. Masonic temples are prominent landmarks in most communities." That's it.
So you can see them in most communities, therefore there's nothing secret whatsoever. Like, what's the definition of secret? Like, you know, just people just not knowing about it? Or it's kept from people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Now, they're great landmarks. Okay. And do you open them to everybody? No. Who do you open them to? Well, people that we invite in. So only the exclusive group of hereditary... membership of this ancient, like, secret society are allowed in, and it's totally secret, and you're not allowed to talk about politics or something, and you're supposed to believe in this higher power, and it's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they don't even tell you what that higher power is, and you think there's absolutely nothing going on whatsoever. They're like, yeah.
Exactly. You're catching on. You could be worshipful master.
I mean, like, oh, okay, you know, if you say so, that's fine. Is everybody freaking stupid? It's just... I guess it's more the fact that because I expect scumbaggery, I actually notice it when it's being told to me, when it's being sold as something else. And going on to illustrate the point about order out of chaos. Now, you guys know I've been collecting a whole lot of screenshots of Masonic symbolism in film and cinema.
Yes, and well done, by the way.
Hundreds and hundreds. But... one other thing that I haven't been doing is taking audio samples from them, because the phrase "order out of chaos" appears as often in films made by any studio as the all-seeing eyes and the black and checkered floors and whatnot. So I'm thinking there's another part of it that really illustrates the point, is that they actually are trying to somehow put this into the public consciousness, perhaps not on a "I'm aware of making the choice," but more like, oh, order out of chaos, you know, that's fine, isn't it?
That's the thinking that the ends justifies the means. I mean, like, here they're giving examples of public events to throw, and here we go with the kids' ID program. Having a set of your child's identification is a good idea for parents. Your lodge can sponsor a one-day ID program, enlisting the help of the local police department. Materials and manpower would be provided by Masons. The program should be announced well in advance so parents can plan to bring in their children.
And you know, Vinny, going that program's always creeped me out. The CHIPS program, right from the very start, I was just never wanted to bring my kids to anything like that, and we never went and never certified our kids in any lodges.
Well, you couldn't have, man. I thought CHIPS was only on TV in the 70s.
Right, and that was a great great theme song, man, with the mirrored sunglasses and everything, man. I had a pair. But to address what you said, Vinny, about how it's this perennial theme being reinforced over and over again, that just goes right back to the whole Stargate conspiracy, the whole idea of the SRI International paper changing images of man, which... from 1973, they mapped it out, that they actually suggested the use of Masonic symbolism in Egyptian iconography to corral mass consciousness, which Maderax has done a lot of research. She's actually working on an article about propaganda by Edward Bernays, who's the father of public relations and propaganda being synonymous, basically the idea of mass, the control of mass consciousness, the production and control of mass consciousness through media, through pop culture, through trusted leaders in the form of political and social icons, you know, like rock stars and movie stars and television stars and sports and athlete, you know, heroes that basically are utilized in a concerted effort. Go ahead, Maderax, if you want. I'm putting you on the spot as usual, but if you want to talk about this this subject a little bit, that'd be really cool. People would be interested, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I'm still working on getting all my notes together to kind of like make a flowing kind of synopsis. But it's interesting, as I was reading, how much of today's like programming on TV is reminiscent of what was kind of being said in the beginnings of this whole propaganda thing, like over 100 years ago. And to see the evolution of it kind of going against the stated agenda as far as like what was propaganda back then, what he was trying to say it was. Now it's he tried to make it clear in the book that he wasn't trying to say that this should be used for various purposes, and yet it seems to be being used for that right now. And
he's like, it was a celebration of democracy and free thought, mm-hmm. for everybody to be able to use mass consciousness to just bring about the right political agenda, for example. You always, in a very altruistic way, is how he depicted it.
Right. And so it's very interesting to have read that, and I'll be.
Well, it's a sales pitch at the end of the day, and all sales pitch tell you, you know, they put a really nice, beautiful image in your mind, and they tell you this, that, factor, it's going to cure your baldness, it's going to make your angry wife calmer, it's going to make everything just gravy. And of course, people who are desperate and don't want to think for themselves, in fact, many cases have never tried or never been taught to think for themselves, are constantly looking for somebody else to follow, somebody else to tell them what to do, some kind of authority to basically make the important decisions in their life so that they can continue to not think for themselves.
And just go along with their daily business, with their heads.
Now, that's how it happens on an individual level. Imagine that happening at a collective level. How bad would society get? And yeah, there it is. we've got exactly the society that I just described, didn't I?
Seems like it, yeah.
A collective apathy. A calapathy.
And you know, Vinny, it's more than a sales pitch, too, because it's the next level. It's like Mad Men on steroids. It's the production of the need and the provision of the what you need, you know, what you want. It's the solution and the problem. It's the controlled opposition, because they're with propaganda and public relations, they're talking about these. All right, for example, these an example. It was like felt patterning, you know, felt material or what was it? It was something from the 19th century, this particular kind of material, textile material that was going out of fashion. But there was
velvet.
Velvet, right. So there was a huge industry of velvet producers that needed to do something to get Americans buying velvet again, right? So what they did was they sent agents over to Europe to like inject this notion of felt being the latest fashion into the fashion world in Europe, so that it would then be reflected back to the Americans and they would pick up on it and run with it. And it like worked. It produced a whole new wave of felt or whatever velvet products that, You know, it's just crazy. But it was a great example of he took that one step further and further with political sculpting, political agenda, how they actually got Wilson elected. And even though everybody was against World War One, and he promised not to go into World War One, but the first thing he did, just like Obama, you know, like escalated war. Oh, yeah, he's Mr. I'm going to take us out of the war. I'm going to shut down Guantanamo. Well, last thing I checked, the Guantanamo is still open, and we're not – no war, no end to war is in sight. That's for damn sure. And you know, it's the same thing with Wilson. He was presented to the people as a populist president that was going to not bring America into the war, and that's exactly what happened. It went right into that war, and this is what public relations and propaganda, that this is why it's so important, why we need to take a look at that book. It's really not that hard of a read. It's actually shockingly simple of a read for people who are readers, and you're just like, you're not reading a textbook. Like, this is no complicated. This isn't Thomas Paine's Common Sense. Let me tell you, this is a very simple read that is showing you, giving you a blueprint of how consensual reality is manufactured in America to this day. And it's on a global scale with multimedia above and beyond the greatest expectations of the nephew of Sigmund Freud, which was Edward Bernays.
Well, of course. It's given birth to the culture of the 21st century, all our consumer culture, all our celebrity culture. And I think the reason why they call it culture is because the word cult's in there, basically, and you start to think about it as everybody... Imagine for a moment that everybody's in a personality cult of some description, and then suddenly, oh my God, it makes a hell of a lot more sense. Why don't you like Barack Obama, Vinny? Well, he borrowed more than all previous presidents of the U.S. history combined, and has killed more people, innocent civilians, than George W. Bush did. And they go, "You're a racist." See, it's a cult. You know, I'm messing with your God complex, man. I'm sorry, but unfortunately,
He's also got more corporate funding. He also, you know, has helped to cut more social service programs. Everybody thought he was going to be a man of the people, you know, like, oh, I'm going to – I had so many friends who were very liberal persuasion who voted for Obama thinking, well, at least, you know, he'll take care of the people, right? Yeah, right. Come on. We're seeing, like, cuts across the board to food stamps, Social Security, and they're, like, giving subsidies to the banks. You know, they're giving subsidies to the bankers, man. Like, the bankers need subsidies right now.
Yeah. Well, here's another relevant passage.
Oh, unfortunately, we're going to have to actually leave that relevant passage to the next segment, because we're going to quickly wrap this one up, and then we have two more to come. Is that all right, James?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break. In the meantime, please go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and start up a subscription today, $5 a month into the bank account. It'll be really nice if we could have groceries and pay the rent this week. So, yeah, we'll be right back.
When you came in, the air went out, and every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the radio version of the Temple of Doom, the Dark Occulted Mysticism special. We have Freighter X and Mater X and James Wright as well. And we're talking about things that are very, very wrong within Freemasonry. So, James, you had a passage, much like Indiana Jones, to read out here.
Yeah, another one from their
secret passage.
Their public relations manual, dirty, naughty, filthy secret book that maybe only 50 eyes in the world have held and touched and read. But as it says here, this is back toward the beginning. Blue Lodges must capitalize on every newsworthy event in which they are involved. News is what people want. The more characteristics of a good news story that our Blue Lodge news releases contain, the better chance the Lodge has of obtaining coverage in the media. Most editors of local newspapers and the program directors of the local radio stations or cable TV outlets consider that newsworthy stories have such characteristics as being informative, educational, timely, significant, unique, interesting, and of human interest. In many communities, there are those who are opposed to Freemasonry. They seem to find it easy to make the headlines with their inaccurate accusations. A public relations committee is one of the best ways to make certain that Freemasonry gets the right message across. Without such a committee, the fraternity falls victim to undeserved and erroneous criticisms and misconceptions. Doesn't that sound like a good little victim story there?
Absolutely.
Kind of like when they go around threatening people while they say, we don't threaten people.
Yeah. Well, I think it's John Eisen from Uncensored Magazine told me this. He said, if you're a Nazi, the best thing to do to your opponents is to call them Nazis.
Exactly.
Basically, yeah. Accuse all your opponents of being what you are, and but they're always on the back foot, and everybody suspects you of being the exact opposite of what you're accusing everybody else of, but it's the exact opposite again. It's brilliant, but so simple. And it works because people are also that simple-minded.
Yeah, in 1859, when Albert Pike was elected to be or appointed to be the Grand Commander of the Supreme Council of the whole shebang, one of the first things that they stated was the explicit core mission or primary purpose of the Scottish Rite Supreme Council was to discover, root out and discover all, you know, spurious and false or irregular degrees and degree systems out there and identify them as such and neutralize them. That was explicitly in the documents. Like they were going to, you know, discover them, root them out, and neutralize them. And that goes along the lines of exactly what you're saying. The first thing you do is we're the ones that are going to find all the fake degrees out there. Really? That's, you know, basically because you guys know how it is to be a fake degree, right? You know how it is to be a fraud and how it is to be, you know, made up. And
yeah. And if you tell everybody this, then they can just deny it and say, well, that's just absurd. We've been saying the exact opposite of the truth for so long. Who'd believe you?
Right, exactly. But, you know, in keeping with that, the real culprit of all this, of these orders and these secret societies and this idea of cloak of secrecy in our modern world, postmodern world, is the fact that the initiates, those who become members and adherents, are gagged by their own leadership and their own hierarchy. They are made to not speak the truth. They're made to not tell what they know. And that's the key. You know, even myself, I was a victim of that. In order to be advanced to higher levels of the Rosicrucian, to the highest level, the high council, I was, you know, under gag order almost from the leadership of the local college of Rosicrucians that I was a member of, because they were afraid that if I talked too much to the higher ups, they'd get a whiff of a load of what I was thinking, and they wouldn't approve, and they wouldn't give their blessings to my advancement into the politically advanced level, because they were, you know, the leadership locally in my area was just trying to get me into a position where I could serve as their secretary, and basically marginalize me in that way by getting, you know, waving the carrot of the esteem and prestigious invitational only Masonic order. James knows what I'm talking about. Within the body proper of Freemasonry, these other invitational orders are like the big carrots. They're the things that are waved under the noses of those who want to be in the in crowd, you know, to be, and a lot of them are just at really elaborate supper clubs where people are getting together, dressing up, preening around, patting each other on the back and basically just having a dinner, you know, and not really doing anything of any real research or any kind of real discovery or understanding or unpacking of Freemasonry.
Right. It's like how every country club has that one dining room inside of it, maybe on an upper floor, where it's like the more upscale version of the country. So in other words, you know, the rest of the country club members, the commoners, they're downstairs eating in the main dining hall, and then you'll have this elite upstairs exclusive dining room where, you know, the truly wealthy and powerful people that belong to the club go and have their coffee and their meals and everything else. And that's exactly what Freemasonry has turned into. And I mean, I get so much criticism from Masons out there who just maybe listen to 5 minutes of what I say or read the description of my book on Amazon or whatever and just make up their minds automatically that I'm just this horrible, disgruntled guy out there with an axe to grind and tear it down and take everything away from them. And that's not
it
at all.
But you are, James. I mean, it's just not the only reason you're doing it. You're also doing it because it's true.
Yeah, because it's true, because the place needs to be sanitized, and enough is enough. This has gone too far.
Yeah.
It really has. The world is out of control, and this is the core reason why.
Yeah, and that's what's so surprising is that everybody's been thinking about whether or not there's an Illuminati and thinking about these shell groups and all of these
other
things.
It's called the Order of the Silver Star, but that's a whole other.
No. I mean, like the creature. Trilateral Commission and the Bilderberg groups and all of that kind of thing. But unfortunately, there's another whole side to it that oversees the whole operation, is it?
And then there's Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, I didn't get that reference.
I posted a little image of Ted Nugent in the chat. But anyways, no, that's from Mater X. She found this. We're on a Ted Nugent kick because he's on the news. You know, he's just a fanatical sociopolitical voice.
Apparently he gave
voice.
The smackdown to Roseanne Barr on Anderson Cooper the other day. About
what?
About the Tea Party and America.
Just about, you know, the typical American propaganda. Yeah, but
loves Sarah Palin, by the way.
Yeah, well, then he's an idiot, and I love Roseanne Barr, so he's double idiot.
She actually gave him the smackdown. It was
good.
It was great.
You'll be surprised how hard it is to pass the bar in America.
No, but really, it was one of those things that was labeled one way, and in fact, if you watch the video, it went a totally different way. But like Jay just mentioned, when a lot of times people viewing our media or viewing anyone's media for that matter. You just watch a few moments of it. You don't get the full story, or you don't, you know, you just breeze through something. And you don't get the full story. You don't understand that what's going on, and you just pass judgment immediately. And that's a tricky slope that
people have a short attention span, down. A very, very short attention span. About 30 seconds, I think.
Well, yeah, that's why I mean, it's been my learning experience through all of this, doing it for 2 years now, that I can reach far more people through radio than I can with books. And, of course, part of that problem is I have an evil, satanic, Masonic publisher in Hollywood who's doing everything in his power to try and keep the information down. And, you know, I've told you all about that story, so we don't need to waste time going back into that. But yeah, that's how Hollywood works. And God forbid somebody pick up a book and read it and figure out that it's actually like some of the most damning stuff ever written about the place. I mean, it's not like I'm just coming out and going, oh yeah, they're awful, they're nasty, so saith I. No, I mean, I've slammed the evidence on the table every step of the way, including but not limited to the genealogical end of it. And I mean, they haven't issued one single rebuttal the entire time. Now, if I was just some cray-cray off the street, I mean, they would have slammed me into the pavement years ago and dismissed me as a kook and a crank, and that would have been the end of that. But they're scared to death to engage me on this level because they know that I can shoot them down in any debate they try and throw at me. Like a Mason the other day was writing me and telling me, well, but regardless of whatever, you've broken your obligations. And I go, no. Let's look at this like a lawyer would. Okay. Yeah, I took those O's, obligations, whatever you want to call them, blah, blah, blah. But we can liken those to contracts. And when the party issuing the contract breaches it, then the contract is null and void. So I can run around having Masonic secret-telling Tourette's of the mouth all day long, and I am perfectly within my right to do that.
I mean, that is a technicality you could really angle, because, in fact, there's a misrepresentation that you were even given Freemasonry, that you even were received the light of the mystery of Freemasonry based on the infiltration of outside orders. You know, so yeah, I mean, you've got a good point. It's semantics is what it is, but
well, the gloves came off with me when I was told by the chairman of the board of the Scottish Rite Supreme Council that I was not allowed to return to my mother Blue Lodge, who just so happens to rent its lodge room space from the Scottish Rite building, which crosses a line in such an extreme way. You know what I'm talking about, Fratter. I mean, it's Masonically, it's the biggest no-no imaginable, and yet they did it. And then everybody at my lodge stood idly by with their thumbs up there, you know, just allowing it. And nothing was ever done with these guys who were causing the problems. And I don't mean just me. I mean the guys who were every day using racial epithets against the Hispanic cleaning crew, or the guys who were sexually harassing the female office personnel, or the guys who were using their position in Freemasonry or the Scottish Rite in particular to try and get local political favors and pressure politicians in the name of the place and all of that. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and I love to use the analogy. It's like a misbehaving child that the only way you can discipline is to take away the toy. That's all that can be done.
Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to, if you mentioned the idea of how many people are...
I was just thinking about this. No more underage boys for you.
I take away your toy there, yes. Bad, bad, evil Chud, you go back into the dungeon. But anyways, I wanted to kind of shift gears, and because you mentioned
radio enjoy that.
Shows.
Wouldn't they enjoy back in the dungeon, you know, with the whips and the leather and the manacle? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sure they would have each loved to have been Caligula, but anyway.
Hey, in fact, there was another interesting story to show that judges and high-level officials are also into really, really dark frickin' sexual practices and bondage and all of that kind of jazz, man.
You want me to be naughty and name names? There's a Texas state judge by the name of John Marshall, who is on the payroll of the Dallas Scottish Rite for no reason. They call him a consultant, but a consultant of what? What exactly? I don't know. I never
did
know.
Let me guess. He's a CPS judge.
I don't know. Family court kind of stuff. I'd have to look it up. It's possible, but all I know is it was state level, and he had an office there in the building for no reason and hung out there all the time for no reason. His wife was the, what do you call it, the sort of PR woman of the building who dealt with like the private rentals and all of that. And here these people are all being handed $60,000 a year salaries. So how many Masons that want to get mad at what I say, they need to stop for a moment and consider that. All of these secretary generals and chairmen of the boards and Supreme Council officials and everybody else, they are making minimum $60,000 a year, if not more, of your dues money to sit around and do nothing except bark out orders at you. So well, how does that make you feel as a Mason? That would be my question.
Talking to me?
Well, he's the only one. You're the only other.
No,
Mason
I'm
in
talking
the room.
More to like your sort of a online troll type community.
Well,
I fail to see the point in actually talking to the troll community because they're there to troll, not listen.
Yeah, I ignore a lot of BS that, you know, Mater X.
True, but then they inadvertently end up working full-time for you for free as your publicity agent. So, you know, que sera, sera.
Well, you or have in the case of South of the Border, it's not que sera, sera, it's just pronounced a quesadilla.
Now I'm hungry for Mexican food, damn it.
I really am. Yeah, I want some Tabasco sauce and rub it in the eyes of a Mason, you know?
Man, that's just mean.
I'm joking. I wouldn't do it to either of you.
Well, let me ask you something completely unrelated to this topic. Let's shift gears completely away from this, Vinny. Do you think that we went to the moon?
Are you talking about in the time that they said that they first went to the moon or since?
I'm just in general, yeah, both.
In general, I reckon, yeah, we've been to the moon. I'm just not entirely convinced that the original moon landing was totally true, because the amount of documentary evidence that flies in the face of almost everything that the public record is supposed to state just doesn't make any sense to me.
And all those guys were Scottish Rite Freemasons, the first Apollo astronauts. They were all Scottish Rite 32nd degree.
Yes, Houston the Eagle has landed was a symbolic reference to the double-headed eagle's purple Scottish Rite flag.
Mm.
And the brother, the guy that was one of the managers, NASA operation managers, was brother of Kleinek there that wrote Your Amazing Mystic Powers. His brother, was the manager, NASA operation manager, and so the connection runs deep with these
guys.
Yes,
and they all belong leadership to a lodge in Houston called Tranquility Lodge Number 2000.
Which is the Tranquility Lodge is supposed to be located on the moon. That's where they established the Tranquility Lodge. Because you remember when they landed. Or, no, the first sunrise after landing, I think is what it was. Buzz Aldrin read a part from the third degree ritual, and he had with him a little kit that had holy water, a Bible, all the tools of the altar were there in this little kit that he had, along, you know, with square and compasses and sacred volume of the law and just everything to kind of do like a mock little quasi-Masonic ritual to the rising sun, supposedly on the moon. But now that's aside from the point that this is supposing that they landed. But what I'm asking you, Vinny, is, I mean, have you really looked at the overwhelming evidence, and have you really considered what we've all been asked to believe happened?
Well, do you know Jarrah White?
No.
Dude, you need to interview Jarrah White. This guy's amazing. Like, going into the interview, I was sort of like a bit iffy about it. By the end of the interview, it's like, there's just no freaking way. There's just no freaking way that we got there back in those days, man. Since then, I've heard all sorts of stuff about we've already got moon bases, and there's allegedly some kind of fleet out there from all these fringe researchers. I haven't seen any evidence to substantiate it, but I'm just more open to the possibility that we might have been there since. I don't know. Maybe there's a secret moon program going on here? Then, of course, the other element is the Van Allen radiation belt. That stuff will kill you, all right? And it's around the entire Earth in every single direction. You can't freaking escape it without passing through it, and it'll literally cook everybody in their freaking seats unless they're completely covered in lead, which would be way too heavy to get off the freaking ground in the first freaking place. So maybe we have never been to it.
Yeah, the astronauts are in a vehicle that's supposedly four layers of Mylar, and... and their suits are designed by the Playtex company that makes bras. They designed the suits that supposedly would withstand this radiation, and not to mention micrometeorites that are traveling at 500 miles an hour or 5,000 miles, some outrageous speed, where they would just like rip a hole through a capsule like nobody's business. But somehow And okay, let's talk about this, Vinny. This is the stuff that really matters in my book.
Real quick, to anybody out there who's listening that may be like the skeptical inquirer, go to www.tl2k.org. So that's Thomas Leary, the number 2, K as in Carrie, .org, TL2K.org, and that's Tranquility Lodge number 2000 on the moon. Hidden in plain sight.
Excellent. But that now back to this point I'm making. Okay, Vinny, all right, are you familiar with how we supposedly actually flew these capsules to the moon from Earth?
Not overly, but I've seen copious quantities of documentary footage of all these models of the an actual real life, you know, prototypes of the moon lander. And if you tip it 1 or 2 degrees to one side, the whole thing starts to come over. It's got no horizontal control whatsoever. And you see footage after footage after footage after footage of these same moon landers going boom, boom.
Right.
It's on the start of a movie called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. And you think to yourself, oh my God, they literally just blew up like about 50 vehicles in front of me in order to figure out that they actually really didn't have a handle on what they were doing.
Yeah, and Neil, yeah, there's so many simulated attempts by Neil Armstrong to land the LEM in test ground test airstrips, and every one of them, he's got to basically jettison, go through the emergency jettison to be not destroyed because the thing crashes and burns. I mean, he literally has to make an emergency eject at the last second. So, and then he's makes a perfect land. I mean, a perfect land on the moon, right? With basically just enough fuel. Like, literally, they almost ran out of fuel. They had just enough fuel. And then they stay there with batteries. With batteries. In 1969, everything's run on batteries. Even the lunar the rover in the 70s must have gotten better batteries, but somehow we lost that technology between then and now. I don't know how that happens. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. What I asked you was, is if you understood or had been are familiar with what we've been sold, the bill of goods, the general claim that we basically that getting to the moon from what we did was first we launched from the ground using, you know, the most impractical method of launching this giant rocket from the ground, expending all this fuel just to get it into low Earth orbit. And then in low Earth orbit, which is basically 250 miles up or so, you know what I mean? And then we go into this relatively straightforward procedure we were described. It's basically the slingshot out of low Earth orbit, thus escaping Earth's gravitational pull, and then we just sort of free fall, we're told, to the moon, right? Firing engines every now and then for minor course corrections, but we basically just free fall. So that all sounds just fine in theory until you take a step back and you realize that the moon itself is a satellite of the Earth, right? Held in place by the Earth's gravitational attraction, isn't it? Right? After all, what keeps it from drifting randomly about into the solar system? Right? It doesn't. It stays right in place because it's in the Earth's gravitational pull.
The moon hasn't got kids on Earth that it's hanging around for, you know?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, just not too long ago, there was a newspaper article that noted that satellites that enable GPS devices to work orbit the Earth at an altitude of roughly 12,000 miles, about 11,800 miles beyond the low Earth orbit that we're told we launched the capsules from to slingshot to the moon. And yet they, miraculously enough, still are right in place, right? They don't fall from that. They don't fall to the moon, and they stay right there. What's holding those satellites in place? I'd like to know. How come they're not free falling to the moon, right? Isn't that strange?
Well, you know, it's getting to the point where I'm thinking that there's a hell of a lot of classified information about space travel, gravity, and everything that the entire scientific community is just desperately trying to keep from everybody, because it'd basically mean nobody would trust their BS anymore, which would be quite interesting. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, any minute now.
Listen, damn it. You step outside, you risk your life. You take a drink of water, you risk your life. And nowadays you breathe, and you risk your life. Every moment now, you don't have a choice. The only thing you can choose is what you're risking it for. Now, I can make these people feel better and hang on a little bit longer. I can save lives. That's reason enough to risk mine. And you know that.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment of the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's a special Dark Occulted Mysticism episode with Freighter X from the Middle Chamber and James Wright from Dial M for Mason and Mater X from Freighter X's bedroom.
She literally is in the bedroom as we speak on the laptop, which is funny.
You know, you can't make this stuff up.
Yes. Fratter X After Dark.
The dark stuff that you learn in the Sonic Lodge, eh?
Hey, he might get syndicated on the Playboy channel on Sirius.
Yeah. Is there like some kind of a secret Masonic Kama Sutra or something like that?
It's called the OTO.
I thought it was called Miley Cyrus.
I don't, you know, I don't mean any disrespect to, you know, whatever. I'm just joking about the OTO. But anyways, because they're kind of weird to me. But anyways,
well, that's because they're OTT.
but really though, But the last question I asked in the last segment about how does this GPS satellite stay at its 12,000-mile orbit and not go to the moon or not come back to us or whatever, where we're supposed to be, you know, we're told this whole fantastic journey where we slingshot around the moon from 250 miles up and then – or slingshot around the Earth from 250 miles up and somehow launch to the moon in this manner. People could probably come up with a rebuttal to that question easily, and that would be just fine if that was the only question. But it turns out there's a multitude of questions, and that's why we're going to have a couple of awesome guests coming on the Middle Chamber in the next couple of weeks. First, we're going to have Professor James Fetzer, who was at the Free Your Mind conference with us. And he also was he's just really a pioneer in the field of conspiracy science. And he's a philosophy professor. So it's basically the knowledge and wonder is part of it, you know, and he really brings an amazing amount of passion and research to a lot of the most controversial conspiracy ideas, a conspiracy, you know, what we call the truther curriculum is what I call it. And it basically would be the top, you know, the top four or five big questions in our culture today, you know, like, for example, who shot JFK and what happened at 9/11 and whether or not we landed on the moon and what happened at Sandy Hook is a more relevant, smaller, you know, in I think retrospect to the other events, but yet along the same lines and consistent with the same false flag, you know, mind controlled cognitive dissonance and just it's all in line with this massive scale of mind control program in America, I think, and in the world. And then after that, we're going to be talking to David McGowan, who's just written several amazing books. The Wagging the Moon Doggy one, which is where I'm drawing a lot of the information I'm talking about right now with the moon landing. And then he wrote Inside the LC. It's been rewritten, or the title has been sort of modified and expanded as Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, which talks about the music and the film and television industry of the 60s and 70s in the Laurel Canyon neighborhood in California, and just the controversy surrounding the interconnections between all the musicians of the 60s and 70s. Their families are all connected to like military intelligence, government, you know, intelligence, and you know, industrial.
And the OTO.
yes, and of course the OTO. But as a matter of fact, the Agapa Lodge does come up a few times in some of the stories, because I guess John Carradine and a few others were members of the Agapa Lodge of the OTO, and a couple other really strange, like creepy dark orders that were into like snuff films and other crazy stuff, according to the research that Dave McGowan's uncovered. That's really amazing dark stuff. And at the top of Laurel Canyon was this Lookout Mountain Laboratory, which is basically a film, a covert film production studio that made like thousands of government, you know, confidential government films, top secret government
more
films.
More movies than were made in Hollywood. At the time, I think.
Well, and there were a lot of people involved, like Marilyn Monroe, Ronald Reagan, even Walt Disney, several very famous film personalities and producers were involved in this laboratory, starting in the 40s and going right up until the late 60s and early 70s. But anyways, we're going to be talking to the author of that, and you know, it's just a lot of exciting stuff dealing with. Why is it important? Well, you know, it's not just fringe conspiracy science people. It's like a revision of what we think we know about a lot of urban legends and a lot of civic mythology that we've been raised to believe is one way. And in fact, it's completely opposite and everything we know is wrong.
Yeah. And that's just kind of like my general rule of thumb. If it comes from an official source, it's probably the direct opposite of whatever they're saying it is. And if you can't, you know, prepare it for dinner in your own kitchen, then it's a self-kill bioweapon.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's the core overarching theme of Dark Cult of Mysticism show, and I think all of our media really, is that we're exploring, you know, to varying degrees, all of us are exploring what and identifying what we see as problems, and then looking and unpacking solutions and looking at how can we respond to this, and what's the you know, the thing that the charm that you bring, Vinny, is the humor, which is really a necessary thing, is a part of your mantra that you preach, you know, is that you got to have a sense of humor, because it's just, you know, if you don't, you're just going to go friggin' crazy, because it's just such a dark world at times, and there's such an overwhelming amount of really, really horrible things going on. But at the same time, there's a lot of wonderful things going on too, and there's still a lot of wonderful people out there that are doing amazing things, and there's a lot of reasons to laugh and a lot of reasons to appreciate the blessings that we have, even though for us too, it's a real struggle, and we welcome any assistance, any contributions to the cause, anybody that wants to donate to the media, go to our website, you know, contact us. And we have a PayPal, you know, at MaterX369@gmail.com. But you know, that's, we're all trying to make ends meet, because we're in the trenches here, people. We're not even Jay and I. We may have ascended. We ascended within the lodge system because of our the merit of our insights and the connections that we have with these orders. It hasn't given us wealth. It hasn't given us any advantage. It really hasn't. We're not living the lap of luxury because of our connections. And this is proof that not all Masons are controlling the world, because a bunch of Masons are broke, and I know them personally, you know, and they're not at all benefiting financially from their affiliation with the lodge, but they're filling the numbers and they're filling the roles and they're paying their dues, which is paying into the system, which is then being, you know, large funds are created that are then being directed, spent, you know, appropriated and spent by certain individuals. And those are the people that we are most interested in exposing and identifying and trying to bring a halt to by means that go, you know, this is a sonic revolution. I mentioned the sowing the seeds of the psycho-spiritual anarchy before. And I've been listening a lot to different people who are talking about the philosophy of the sound vibration, this idea of radio and talking. We're involved in a sonic revolution because we are the counter signal. The signal of control comes out through mass media and lays down the consensus to us all. This is how things are. This is how you need to think about it. This is, you know, here's the range of responses you're allowed to work with. And then there's the counter response. And the counter response is guerrilla media. That's where you come in, Vinny, you know. That's where we come in with the middle chamber and the Dial M for Mason is the counter response.
Yeah, but the problem is it got stolen, right? By somebody who works for the FBI, Guerrilla Media, the name. This is a point that Alan Watt brings up. Whenever a counter-revolution starts to happen that's outside of the system's control, they co-opt it, and if they can't co-opt it, they eliminate it.
Absolutely, but you remain, and this is the persistence, non-compliance, and persistence is our key because it is a sonic revolution. Once again, you're not fighting with guns, you're not fighting with bombs, you're not fighting with, you know, swords or violent threat. You're fighting through vibration, through knowledge and information and persistence and noncompliance, because you choose to stand on the principle that says, you know what, I'm not gonna bring myself my dignity beneath this level and become a slave. I'm going to stand and I'm going to struggle and I'm going to stand on my convictions and live the way I live because I don't believe in this other way and I don't want to endorse it. You know, that's a laudable and commendable stance. And it takes, you know, it's a hard road to walk. But that is the distinction.
There's only so far that I'm willing to go. Like, I'm not willing to get arrested or anything like that. I'm not willing to go get a slave job to support myself and things of that nature. It's just I can't do those things that other people do every day that appear, you know, just normal, you know, going up and getting into work and all of that kind of stuff. I think because I was traumatized in the process of doing it for even a very short time because I feel things a little bit more intensely than most people. But, however, there's other people like in the Free Man Truth Sovereignty movements and Splinter Cell groups or whatever they call themselves now. Who are really putting themselves on the line and having them deprived of their freedom and their private property and things of this nature in the name of trying to help others and provide an example of lawful resistance and things of that nature, right? But what I find really difficult to reconcile about that is I'm not willing to go the distance that they're doing, but it doesn't mean that my contribution has no value. I think it's more like, what did somebody describe it? A Mobius. It's like a if you got a flat cylindrical piece of paper. Oh, sorry. You know, you got an A4 sheet of paper, and then you fold it lengthways, so it's like a long rectangle, and then you twist it at both ends, and so it becomes sort of like a corkscrew, and then you put the two ends of those corkscrews together, so it goes up and down and round, and it can't survive with one side without the other, and it's all interconnected. And one thing that really aggravates me is when people say one person's job is more important than the other, or one person's job doesn't matter, or that kind of thing. And I find it's actually the ones that are hardest to accept. I mean, James, you're a prime example of this. The amount of reception that you've had to exposing Freemasonry, and I mean really exposing Freemasonry, bigger and badder and bolder print than anybody's really ever been able to attempt before, until Freda's book comes out, of course, you've experienced precisely how the system comes after you when you're being effective.
Yeah, I mean, initially I thought that I was just going to do a little bit of good, start a positive dialogue amongst my Masonic peers, hopefully at the end of the day get some sort of positive change, if not enacted, then at least on its way, you know, to being so. But all the opposite things happened. They just acted even worse. They, I mean, I had Masons that were coming over to check on me. I mean, guys I trusted, friends of mine from Lodge. And they were concerned because they had a front row seat for what went down at the Scottish Rite. They were coming to my house to check on me because I went through the worst depression of my life after that. And they witnessed my phone just blowing up, vibrating until it was falling off the table with these guys calling, harassing me. And I'm not talking about low-level goons. I'm talking about the chairman of the board, the secretary general, the SGIG. I mean, behaving like 13-year-olds. It was just crazy. And so I wrote the book, and I thought, okay, you know, this will stymie it, and it'll cause an intelligent dialogue to ensue within the halls of Freemasonry. Well, no, it did the exact opposite. It caused them to go into a big uproar and then start trying to do things like kill me and threaten me all the time and continue with the stalking. And I mean, it's gone on since day one. And then a curious thing happened. Once the book was out, I got a couple of radio spots, and then the whole thing just blew sky high. And it's phenomenal. I don't understand it sometimes. It's just crazy to think how big this has gotten, how many people are interested. And I don't think a lot of people out there quite realize how much therapy and solace that I derive from their support and cheering me on. Because if I didn't have that, then all I would have is the ton of bricks that always did and always continue to come down on me from that environment. And I always say it's like leaving an abusive husband. That's exactly what the process has been like. And in this case, the husband you're leaving would be like, you know, a state senator or somebody that you just have no chance in hell of getting an amicable divorce out of, or walking away with anything except a bunch of misery and torture if you live through it. So, you know, my day-to-day struggle, yeah, I'm broke. I struggle for this. I struggle for that. I rub nickels together to come up with enough money to put, you know, a gallon of gas in the freaking car. But, I mean, keeping alive seems to be priority number one. And, I mean, granted, it's been easier out here in the middle of the Sonoran Desert, but I can't sit out here forever. I've got to get back into Los Angeles soon, and with that comes a lot of bonuses and good things, and with that also comes a lot of hardships and heightened threats and challenges and everything else. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, and it doesn't matter where I go. I can either run and hide and do nothing, and then it was all pointless and completely in vain, or I can take a stand and do as much as I possibly can, even if it kills me. So that's where I'm at. And
see, that's the level of dedication that I don't have, James. I really don't want to have to die for my cause, and honestly, I'm probably not willing to. It's I don't know why, but I feel like I can accomplish a lot more if I'm alive. I could be wrong.
Well, I agree with you, and I don't want to die either. But the fact remains that one day I may go out in a car and not come back, because these guys are serious. Like you said earlier, this has never happened before. And when they're dealing with something that's never happened before, they always completely F it up, like to hell and back. I mean, like the assassination of William Morgan, the assassination of Joseph Smith. They carried out these operations in such sloppy, brazen, stupid ways that it just made a complete three-ring circus out of each one of these situations. And history repeats itself. And I mean, I live, there's not a moment that goes by that I'm not looking over my shoulder or mindful of what I'm being served in a restaurant, or it's just, it's anything, everything. I've had to really learn like a sort of an A-list celebrity type grasp of security on, you know, a budget of zero. So it's been extremely difficult, and I'm still around, and I hope to be around a long time, long enough to see the changes I wish for to come around. And that's exactly what the goal with this Magdalene Wright business that I'm involved in and trying to get kickstarted and everything. But once again, it's a situation where, I mean, I'm not this one-man marching band. I'm not Jesus Christ.
Can I make a point here, James? I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know how I've come to the conclusion, I think we all have, that there really is something to this dark occulted mysticism. It's not just all stories that you tell children. There's actually real stuff going on. And it occurs to me that if there's real bad stuff happening with rituals, then there must be real good spiritual entities and things out there as well at the same time, protecting those of us that are trying to expose the scumbaggery. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, maybe there's always going to be a need in human civilization for young men to reach out to elder men for mentorship and what have you, you know, and I mean that in a purely platonic and educational type of a way. But again, it's something that these guys are perverting into where they're turning it into sexual things in nature and slavery, pretty much, you know, do everything I say, be my little errand boy and don't get paid for it because you're a Mason, you're supposed to do volunteer work. Well, no, that doesn't mean, you know, run around for the Secretary General and run all his errands and live his life for him and call that Masonic charity work. No, that would actually be going and like doing volunteer work at a children's hospital or whatever. So, I mean, it's always this reoccurring theme of doublespeak with them. And it just, the one thing that surprises me just a tiny bit at this point is that they've not tried to make any kind of a public concession or apology or whatever for all of the things that they let go on their watch and continue to. You know, if they would take a stand and apologize and get rid of the people who truly are the problems, then my whole argument would go away overnight. I would have nothing left to say. But again, this is the perfect artistic representation of their obsession with their ego and their power and the unwillingness to see it go away.
And, you know, to answer your question, though, Vinny, there are those out there fighting the good fight, the Jedi light side of the Force, if you will. I mean, even there is a group, the Arcanorium.com or .org website, which is Peter Carroll's new online mystery school. They have the Knights of Chaos, which is an actual order, a magical order within the school that literally fights evil corporations. They perform group ritual combat, you know, magical combat against evil corporations like Monsanto's or other corporations that they identify as being involved in the occult war on human consciousness and human existence that's going on. So you're right. There is a battle going on. There is really something going on. And there are really people fighting on both sides of this that are trying to bring about the good and are also obviously trying to bring about the darkness, you know, and who knows? I mean, I just got done with an interview with E.A. Coetting from BecomeALivingGod.com today for the new podcast for the Middle Chamber. And I mean, he's a self-proclaimed black magician, practices black magic, baneful magic, and other forms of magic that are, you know, would scare the socks off a lot of people, Christian of nature or otherwise, religious in orientation. But when you hear him talk and tell it, it's not at all what you would expect somebody who makes this claim to be saying. As a matter of fact, it's very much a part of like, it's got a very human self-actualization or human potential movement type feel to some of the insighted philosophy at the core of what he's dealing with. And it is, of course, though what's called the left-hand path or the darker side of things, but his results are good. I mean, he's not trying to, he's not necessarily trying to hurt people, although he makes no bones about it. Things that Jay's talked about, things that, about the kind of things that he's experienced, a guy like EA Coetting would offer, you know, instruction on combat, you know, would offer defense against the dark arts, if you will, in response to that kind of stuff. He's not the kind of person that would, shrink down from that or shrink away from it. Just like Jay stands his ground too, you know. I mean, he's not, he stands his ground and he continues to express his conviction in the face of all the opposition that he experiences. And we all have to. I mean, I haven't had half the hardship that Jay's gone through, but of course my book isn't out yet and we'll see how things go. I really think that the best response we get from a lot of these mainstream sources, like our mutual brother there, Robert Sullivan, that Vinny's going to be presenting a podcast of, you know, is no response, the non-response. Because in a lot of ways, I think, James, they ignore us because they don't want to give us power through attention to us. You know, it's easy to ignore.
No, that, try to, well, that marginalize. That was it at a certain point, but it's gone past that now. Now it's turned into a popularity contest, which we are winning by far and large. And if they send their little dorky apologist into the arena to try and debate you, me, anybody, the guy is going to trip up all over himself miserably, and then they're going to have an even larger disaster on their hands to contend with.
Indeed. Well, there we go. There's finishing on a high note, ladies and gentlemen. You've just heard another episode from James, and... another episode of the Vinny Case.
That's right, Supreme Council. I'm going to get you.
Yeah,
I'm going to get you, and when I get you, I'm going to smack you.
And thanks to Mater X for indulging our the usual rants she has to deal with when we start
our wild hallucinations, yes.
Can you just imagine all the women listening to the show sitting back going, oh, my God.
Yeah, right.
They ever shut up?
Well, what have I signed on to here, right? As usual, that's your usual.
I kind of nailed it in one, didn't I? Well, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast. So please subscribe today for about $5 a month to make up for all the women that just cancelled. Good night!